Okay, welcome back, everyone. This is the Bless You Boys podcast. BlessYouBoys.com is your home for all things Tigers baseball on the SB Nation platform. I'm your host, Brandon Day. With me, as always, or almost always, is my co-host, Ashley McLennan. Ashley, how's it going?
Pretty good. I got the David Price Shohei Ohtani game going on here and mute in the background. Price versus Trout right now, so you know I'm having a good day. Although Ohtani gave up a home run to Mookie Betts first thing, so
here we are.
Here is life, watching some baseball.
I had to turn the game off. I'll have to tell all of our listeners because we found I could not concentrate.
It was just too compelling.
Yeah, it was like three straight intros that just failed because I was sitting there like, oh, what is David Price throwing? Is that the cutter? Like, what's going on? Watching him pitch to Ian Kinsler and all, like, enraptured.
And, of course, Brandon's concerned about this because of his fantasy team, but that's okay.
Yeah, there is a little bit of concern there, although we've been doing well so far. So, the Detroit Tigers played baseball tonight once again.
They actually played a game, for starters, which was amazing, and they won that game.
They won the game? It can be done.
Amazing. I didn't think it was possible.
And, I mean, you know, it's just kind of a hard thing with you being in Canada, because I can't really ever bitch about the weather without feeling like, she don't want to hear about it.
Now,
but the weather has just been god-awful, like, all over North America, basically, for the last week straight or 2 weeks straight. And, you know, we just haven't been able to get games in. There have been, like, a record number of postponements already. And the Tigers are basically off since Sunday, right? Or was it?
Yeah, it was Sunday. Yeah, Sunday they didn't play either game of their doubleheader against the Yankees.
Yep.
And then Monday was an off day, and they actually did get baseball in today on Tuesday.
Tomorrow already to, you know, like a day game to try to get it in.
Yeah, Sunday was weird. It was like, I think, seven different games were postponed that day.
Yeah.
That's half of them, basically, right? Like, that's a lot of games.
And they got, like, almost 2 feet of snow up in Minnesota, didn't they? It was pretty close to that. It looked like it.
Oh, it was bonkers. I mean, our sister site, Twinkie Town, was posting live videos of the snow falling, and it was nuts. And I think Bo Burrows actually posted a picture on Twitter today. He was supposed to pitch in Erie, I guess, but there was so much snow on the field. It was just like, can't wait to pitch today, but it looked like January.
Yeah.
Which was amazing. I mean, it's been making for some pretty entertaining photos. I'll say that. Like, we got to watch, you know, the Cubs throwing snowballs around on Wrigley Field and, you know, I think during the White Sox Tigers game, or it was maybe in a Rays White Sox game, but there were guys out there like playing baseball with snowballs.
Oh yeah.
So yep. I mean, it's been really fun to watch these guys like make the most of it, but there comes a point where it's like, this is really frustrating. It's like the Tigers have played what, 13 games, 14 games now.
Yep, 14, yeah, and we're
and it's mid-April already. Like it's bonkers.
Yep. And And the thing is, there's no escape from it because it's not, you know, it's going to affect the schedule all year. There's going to be weird doubleheaders mixed in against the Yankees at some point. And,
yeah. Well, I think the weird one I read today was that the Blue Jays, and they're a dome team, the Blue Jays are going to play 21 games in the next 20 days.
Oh, wow.
It's crazy how many doubleheaders we're going to have to see later in the season because of it. Like, I was looking at how the Cubs rescheduling had to go because of it, and there's, like, even the Twins rescheduling. It's just doubleheaders everywhere and all over the place. Like, you have a whole series getting snowed out. So you're having to find ways to make it work with the right, you know, the right stadium and the right teams and the right schedules, and it's just nuts.
Yeah, and, you know, as cute as it is to get all the videos of, like, the minor leaguers, you know, all running out there, you know, shirtless and sliding across the frozen, icy, snow-covered tarp, that kind of thing. You know, I've had my fill already. Like, this is just too much. We actually had a situation in Toronto where the dome in Toronto actually was punctured by falling ice somehow. And,
well, the CN Tower, ice was falling off the CN Tower. They had to clear the whole area around the base of the tower, I think, today at some point, because it was breaking through glass in places.
Well, yeah, and the Royals were on their bus headed to Toronto, and your magical Canadian ice, you know, like glass-breaking ice somehow flew off the bus in front of them and shattered the windshield of the second bus, and reliever Blaine Boyer, I believe it was, had to, like, leap in and grab the steering wheel because the bus driver got, like, pelted with shrapnel in the face. It's like, what the hell is going on?
It's just nuts. Like, Yes, my Canadian ice is definitely a terrifying and real thing. But yeah, it's crazy when even your dome teams are getting these, like, shutdowns. It's funny, the Jays have been poking fun at themselves for it, because I guess they've been like, well, because we have a dome, we can guarantee play. And then their game the next day got canceled, so they were making fun of it today, going, we can no longer make guarantees, but there should be a doubleheader played today. So,
got a little too cocky up there.
Yeah, that's what happens when you say it. It, you know, it foils it.
I mean, and it does, you know, and it does bring out the worst, just because we're, you know, the sports writer, baseball writers in general, fans, everybody's just going nuts. And so we immediately overreact and start thinking like, well, we've got to change the schedule next year. You know, we've got to put a dome over every stadium, all this kind of thing. And, you know, if they do that, it will ensure like just beautiful weather. starting in late March next year. So, you know, it's probably an overreaction to, you know, start rearranging the entire game based on one long winter stretching into spring we're having right now.
In our MLB work chat, there were some incredible suggestions thrown around, such as only doubleheaders for like, I think, 3 months of play, or everyone just plays like one 27 inning game once a week and you just get through every series that way.
Yeah, and you can reschedule. Yeah.
Yeah, lots of really tremendous Rob Manfred approved suggestions for pace of play.
Yep.
Play the entire off season in just one like 4 day game, I think, was one of the suggestions.
Wow. Yep. So, we gotta get this baseball over as fast as possible. Yeah, our MLB channel is pretty fun generally. Yep. Yeah. So we've been off. We've been off the past 2 weeks. I was just gonna mention this. Like we normally would have recorded last week, but my grandfather actually passed away. What was it? Like it was 2 weeks ago, right before we did
this. 2 weeks.
Last show. So and that's, you know, it wasn't that bad as far as deaths go. He was quite elderly. He was 93, and his wife had died the year before. So. I don't need a big outpouring of sympathy or anything like that. We were, you know, he had a great life, and I was lucky to have him. But one interesting thing that came out of that is that at the same time, basically almost the same time that he was passing away and we were having the funeral last week, a bar opened up called Kiesling's in Detroit, which is like an old family thing, which like my great-grandfather actually opened that bar, I think, back in the 20s.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and it reopened. It was Edith's Hideaway. I think it's in Corktown, if I'm not mistaken. I've actually never been there. I'm going now. But anyway, so there's a new bar called Kiesling's that is an old bar that used to be in our family. And it was just kind of odd that it reopened like right at the same time he was passing away. It was the bar his dad had actually owned. So
that's kinda really timely. It's kind of cool.
It is, and it's super cool looking. So yeah, I'm going to have to get down there and check it out. But yeah, that's why we didn't have a show last week. But we are back, and the Tigers are back, and the Tigers won, as we mentioned earlier, and they did so with tremendous bullpen work, which is kind of becoming a bit of a thing in the early going. Like, we don't like to make too much out of these things, but, you know, Joe Jimenez so far has a 0 ERA through 7 2/3 innings. Shane Green got hit up a little bit on opening day. Since then, he's basically been throwing a no-hitter. And the two of them just looked outstanding tonight. Joe Jimenez is just pumping fastballs and just painting the edges. Shane Green, his usual dominant self with the two-seamer and the slider. And I've just always had this theory that, like, bad teams have good bullpens for some reason. And we can never get one when the Tigers were good, and here we go.
It's the weird, like, balance of things, right? Like, we can never have a good bullpen in years that we're doing really well, but then finally we're in full-on tanking mode because of the rebuild, and it's like, oh, suddenly our bullpen actually has value. Which, I mean, props. Let's hope that Shane Green holds on to some value and is a really exciting trade chip at the trade deadline.
Yep, because there's the potential for him to be, like, one of the premier tradable assets in the game at that point if he really can kind of tear it up in the first half. And you know, we saw what Justin Wilson brought at the deadline last year. That was a huge get for Alavila and the Tigers. And yeah, Green could do just as well or better.
And it doesn't matter. Like, Wilson went on to be pretty terrible for the Cubs after that. And, like, at least not great at all. Yeah. So, I mean,
and he's been kind of a mess this year, too, from what I could tell, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, as long as Green looks good up to the deadline and we get some good prospect return, that's all I care about. He can have, I mean, I don't want to wish anything on him, but I'm like, let's hope that finger numbness thing just holds off a little bit until until he's on another team.
Yep, should be okay, you know, as once we get into the warm weather there. So yeah, just, you know, just use him carefully now, you know, kind of work him through and try to keep his numbers as strong as possible, because yeah, he could really return a haul. So yeah, so that's been good to see. And even like Drew Verhagen and Buck Farmer and some of these other guys have actually not been bad at all. So
like Stump's got a 0 ERA right now too.
Yep. Daniel Stump's been good. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else who's really been showing out. I guess not really, although Chad Bell came up and did nice work, and Daniel Norris had like one really good long relief outing and one where it kind of blew up at the end with a ton, like a string of what seemed like 7 singles in a row by the damn Indians. So
Speaking of Norris, he'll be starting a game on Friday, his first of the season.
Yep. All it took was the schedule getting completely borked so that Daniel Norris can now start. You know, Daniel Norris is basically the servant of, you know, the schedule, the needs of veteran starters. Like, he's just kind of his whole schedule right now is being determined by factors beyond his control, which is really irritating me. But I'm glad he's going to get a start there, and I'm glad they kept him up at least so that he can keep working with Bazio, because I just really want to see Daniel Norris just start for a whole year with Chris Bazio coaching him and to see if we can finally get there. So,
yeah, I'm excited to see what happens. I mean, the relief innings have been hard to judge, right? So I'd like to see how far he can go into a full game, and what he looks like coming in right from the beginning. Oh, yeah. I forgot Chris Sale was a fucking Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, Chris Sale, all that monster.
What is the way to say that? Red Sox, a sock.
He's a sock. I think you have to. There's no other way.
A sock. That is a really weird way to phrase that. Please, if anybody's listening to this and has input on the correct way to make a singular Red Sock, because tell me Red Sox.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing that happens. Wrong. This is what happens when writers suddenly have to talk about stuff, and then we're like, "Wait a minute, how do you pronounce this?" And
yeah,
like,
well, if I'm writing about it, I can very carefully skirt around it. Like, exactly. Since he joined the Red Sox, since he became a Red Sox player,
yep,
right. Like, just saying it is hard.
I love it you're saying that, because I've run into it numerous times where I was like, there was no choice but to refer to them as a sock, and I just rewrote the whole sentence. Like, nope,
right? You just rebuild, yep. Tear it down, and. Yep. Start all over
flipping
again.
The subject and the predicate. I'm getting crazy. We're going to do what we got to do, but I'm not writing he's a sock. I can't do it.
It's wrong. But anyway, if anybody knows the proper grammar for this, I'd be delighted to hear it.
Yep. I mean, people must have dealt with this for, you know, a century now at least. So there must be an answer. Possibly we could look it up ourselves, but let's see. So
that would require having like the internet or something to tell me things.
I know, and we both have like Shohei Ohtani up. I've got like 2 recording devices and Skype and a bunch of other crap all open. I think my computer might burst into flames if I do anything else. So
yeah, don't go crazy. I'm gonna continue to Instagram and watch TV. So yeah.
And then, you know, the other thing that happened over the past week is that Chris Bazio has been away from the team with kind of an undisclosed medical issue and was supposed to kind of rest. And we, you know, I don't want to speculate necessarily what was going on with him, but it was kind of interesting that he just couldn't take it. And I think Ron Gardenhire was basically said to the media today, like, you know, he just kind of flipped out and was like, nope, I can't sit at home like this anymore. And basically what I'm imagining is him sitting at home just screaming at the TV, like watching the pitch and just like, no, I've got to get back. I can't watch this shit anymore. I've got to get back there. This is whatever it is. If it's my heart, you know, like this is worse for my heart than being there where I can do something about it. So hopefully Chris Bazio hasn't returned too soon and is taking good care of himself, because so far I've been pretty impressed with his work.
Yeah, he's been good so far, and hopefully we're not putting too much stress on him, and that's the reason he had to take time off.
Yep. At least he doesn't have to, you know, go through, you know, what Jeff Jones did with that bullpen for so long. Like, that must have just, you know, I'm pretty sure Jeff Jones retired, you know, just on the basis of, like, what Jose Valverde did to him, probably. So, it just took, you know, a couple years out of his pitching coach lifespan. Like, nope, I can't do this. I'm going to go fish and play golf, dude.
You like Jose Valverde took several years off of all of our lives. I think he is the cause of many a drinking problem.
Yep, could be.
And I feel like liquor sales at Comerica or closed at early specifically because of that man.
Yeah, we did. We did get a lovely series of quotes from Ron Gardenhire, who is just, you know, doing everything possible to endear himself to us on a personal level, in which he marveled at the wonder that is Myers now that he and his wife have moved to the Detroit area. and just couldn't believe that there's, you know, a store that had, you know, more liquor and wine than any other liquor store, but then it has everything. So, yeah, that was kind of funny. Just, like, seeing him just kind of, like, you know, breaking it down, like, yeah, we were, you know, we're just boggled our minds to go into that place. There are big supermarkets in Minnesota. I refuse to believe there aren't, but...
No, I mean, there are. Like, I've been to Minneapolis quite a few times, but I've never been to a Meijer, so I don't know. Please write your hate mail to me for having never been to a store that doesn't exist in Canada. We have things called Superstore, and they're very exciting. But we don't sell... The funny thing about Canadians, FYI, and I'm not sure if this is true across Canada, but in Manitoba, you grocery stores here.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
So that's not an option. You have to go to a liquor store because most of the provinces in Manitoba do a provincial tax on liquor.
Oh, yeah.
So they're actually provincially run. So that's an interesting fun fact about Canada.
Yeah. There's quite a few states actually still that are that same way, where you kind of have to go to like the state-run liquor store, and there's, you know, maybe 5 or 10 of them in the whole state, and it's all directly supervised by the state itself. So, yeah,
it's privatized in Alberta, so there, of course, there's like liquor stores and like porn shops on every corner.
Oh yeah,
in Calgary, but other places not so much.
as you'd expect, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Yep. So yeah, Ron Gardenhire is. You know, learning his way around and becoming acquainted with our strange Michigan ways, which is good for him. And looking ahead to the schedule, yeah, like, so here we are now after all these days off, and now we've got Baltimore the next 2 days, both of them at, I think they're both at 1:10, they're both afternoon games now, they rescheduled Wednesdays.
Yeah, they moved them up, because it's supposed to rain tomorrow, and I think they're just trying to get games in at this point.
Yep, and then we've got doubleheader with KC on Friday, which I think is Fulmer and Norris both pitching that day. And then KC in on the weekend, and the weather still doesn't look like it's going to be good till next week, when the Tigers will, of course, then leave town to go to Pittsburgh and Baltimore after that. So,
oh my God.
Yeah.
On the plus side, if we're going to Pittsburgh, we get that beautiful PNC view. So that's something.
Yep. I do like PNC Park. Yep. That's definitely a good one. You know, the problem right now too is just that, you know, there's things I want to talk about with the Tigers, but I don't want to talk about them too soon, and I'm like trying to hold off. Like, it's been nice seeing, you know, Victor Martinez homered again tonight, just drilled one into the opposing bullpen in left center field.
Wasn't that his first home run of the season? Am I crazy?
No, I think it was second. I think he had one other one earlier, but yeah, the Tigers are definitely, like, you know, just bringing up the back of the pack as far as home run power has been concerned so far. Although, obviously, that's somewhat weather-related. They have had a lot of warning track fly balls that maybe would go out, you know, in other points in the year. So, but yeah, Victor's looked all right. Miggy came out of the game with a little bit of back tightness, and they're kind of, like, downplaying it like it wasn't any big deal. But what we've seen is that Miguel is smoking the baseball and hitting it very hard, but he is not driving the ball in the air. And sometimes it takes him until May or June before that really starts to come for him. I've seen the show a couple different times. I think 2015 was fairly similar to what we've seen so far. So nobody lose your minds yet, but it would be nice to have some confirmation from Miguel that, you know, he's back and things are going to be okay, and he's going to be, you know, at least some reasonable semblance of himself as we go along. But we'll probably have to wait until the weather gets a little bit nicer to really get a feel for that.
It was Victor's first home run of the season. I had to look it up.
Was it?
Yeah.
Ah.
Well, he was doing so well in spring training, right? So we had a bunch of them in spring training, which was great. But you don't see anything for the first 3 weeks of the season. It's like, oh.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a good two-runner.
Yep. Yeah, Nick doesn't have one yet. Candelario hit that frickin' bomb. I think it was last Friday. It's like a 440-footer. Nico Goodrum has a home run, and Miguel has one. But yeah, we haven't seen a whole lot of home run power. Of course, you know, Jose Iglesias and Dixon Machado aren't going to show a whole lot of home run power, so that's just kind of the way it goes. James McCann, I should mention that one too, because he actually did hit a pretty big missile to center field that was probably 430 feet. So they're finally starting to swing a little bit more power in the bat. But yeah, this offense, you know, it's just going to be kind of a struggle this year. I don't think there's anything we can do about that.
I don't think there's going to be a lot of breath holding here. I think we're just going to get pleasant surprises here and there.
Yep. And, you know, one of the early surprises that, you know, Mikey Matuk, you know, really struggled in the spring, really struggled the first, you know, 12, 13 games of the season. And so last week, the Tigers sent him down to AAA, where he's unfortunately continued to struggle. But what did you think about that move? Did you think it was a little bit too rushed, or do you think it's kind of just the fact that the Tigers through their lack of wisdom or just circumstance, have too many outfielders at this point, and Mikey still had an option.
No. I have, of course, people seem to decide that I love Mikey Matuk.
You do love Mikey Matuk.
I do love Mikey Matuk, but I'm also a baseball realist, right?
Yeah, so, I know. I love him too.
But. I mean, there's a lot of struggle there, and I don't think the Tigers are wrong to move him. You have the option available, and you might as well, right? Like, give the guy a bit of a breather, go down to the AAA level, maybe work out what's causing your problems. It's the same logic that would have led me think it was okay to have Jacoby Jones stay in AAA.
Yeah.
And this way it kind of benefits them both, because I'd rather see Jones getting some big league reps.
Yep.
And I think Matuk just needs, like, a reset. And hopefully he can find it, because right now he didn't have a good game today. He's just not got the at-bat. I don't know if it's the patience or if he's just not seeing the pitches right or what's happening, but something's not working for him. So I think he just might need a little time to face those lower level pitchers and get his what's the word I'm looking for here?
His confidence.
Get his confidence back. I'm fine. I can say words. Yeah, I'm a writer. he just needs that return of confidence, and I don't think he's going to get that playing for a team that's like going to be sub 500 for the rest of the season, whereas I think the Mudhens have a really good shot at being a good team this year.
Yeah.
And I think that could be a boost for him.
Yeah, and at very least, like you said, yeah, just getting to face kind of a lesser caliber of pitcher and a little bit less to worry about. Maybe he can kind of get his approach sorted out and hopefully turn things around. And really, you know, the other thing I like about it is that Jacoby Jones needs to play. Like, there isn't much you can take away from spring training numbers, but one of the few things that does tend to indicate a trend that will continue into the season is your strikeout to walk ratio. And Jacoby Jones' strikeout to walk ratio this spring was amazing, especially from a guy who's never drawn walks and has always struck out, you know, 30% of the time or more. So it was really paining me to see him kind of sitting around when they brought him north and hardly getting to play. So hopefully he will see a lot of playing time and they can kind of get an idea of what goes on. It really feels like Victor Reyes is hardly going to play. Like, they're just going to kind of keep him around all year so that they can, you know, keep him on the roster. And then next year he'll be ours, you know, with options, etc. And then they can kind of do what they want. But that's just kind of a weird situation, because you also have Mike Gerber, Kristen Stewart, who, you know, probably both are about as major league ready as either is going to get. And I like Gerber. I think Gerber could come up and probably be an average outfielder at this point, or pretty close to it. So, yeah, I guess they just got to kind of find out, if anything's changed with Jones. And I don't know, they just have to figure out ways to keep Victor Reyes from falling asleep on the bench every day. So,
yeah.
Yeah,
I'd agree that the thing is that we have seen a lot of improvement for plate discipline from Jacoby, and I think that's a huge thing. I think that shows a lot of maturity from him and a willingness to learn the trade.
Yeah.
And I am excited to see how he develops and whether or not he can turn just that observation into more hits, too.
Yeah.
Because the more he's learning to watch those pitches, I think the better it'll be as he goes through those same pitchers again later in the season. So I'm curious to see how that goes. I'm sorry, Ohtani has the bases loaded and Andrew Benintendi is up.
Oh no.
And they already have somebody warming at the top of the second. Shohei, what are you doing?
Yeah. Well,
Well,
it's his first time pitching in the chilly cold northeast, although I saw
No, they're in Anaheim.
Oh, are they in Anaheim?
Yes.
Oh, I thought they were in Boston. Oh, well. I thought they were traveling for some reason. Yeah, well.
No, they just finished traveling because they were in Kansas City on the weekend.
Mm.
And it was a snowing.
Yep, it sure was.
Yeah. Oh, God. Anyway, I'm sorry. I don't mean to stress you out about this.
No, I'm fine.
Knowing that you can't watch.
No, it's all right. I don't even want to know, especially if it's going bad. I don't want to know. It's perfectly all right. Not a whole lot more to say about the Tigers. There hasn't been a ton else going on. The bullpen's looking pretty good. The starting pitching has continued to kind of exceed expectations. Mike Fiers wasn't great. See, we've been gone 2 weeks.
I thought we fixed this. We figured it out.
Yeah. Mike Fiers was okay the last time out. He was kind of the victim of some bad defense in the outfield from, Leonis Martin and Nick Wiffen on a kind of a line drive that went off the right field wall. So he actually still didn't pitch that badly. Liriano was good today. Fulmer kind of got lit up last time out, but that was against the Indians, and I don't know what the deal is, but they just have evil voodoo magic on us at this point, so.
Yeah, I don't know what the devil pact they made is, but the Tigers will just never be good against the Indians ever again.
Yep. Maybe when Justin Verlander returns. Maybe that will turn the tide, if anything can.
Yeah, if anything can, that will be it. Although, you know, the tweet that will live it in me forever.
Yeah.
The if at first you don't succeed, try and 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 try again.
Yep. One of these days, it's got to work out.
And I think they won after that one. So it's good for something.
Yep, they did. And and speaking of Mr. Verlander, we were just going to mention, you know, he and Max Scherzer were both the AL and NL players of the week, respectively. And that's just frustrating, man.
It's like watching all of your exes like go to a party together.
Yeah, and they just look their best.
And just
like,
post
dialed.
Some super, super great photos on Instagram later about it. And you're just sitting at home in your sweatpants eating ice cream right out of the pint. That's how it feels right now to watch Verlander and Scherzer do so well.
Yep. Yep.
It's like tell yourself you're really happy for them, but you're just crying into your like chocolate chip cookie dough. It's fine.
Yeah,
everything's fine.
It's totally fine. It wouldn't. You know,
I'm not addressing anything from personal experience. This isn't my life.
Yep. This, you know, things would be exactly the same if Max was here. You know, we wouldn't have, you know, won a World Series, you know, or multiple, you know, over the past few years. You know, nothing would have been different. So. So it goes, you know, they made that decision and it's okay. But no, really just watching both of them just go out and just still dominate, you know, both of them, kind of getting long in the tooth for Max now a little bit too, has just been going and going, since 2012, maybe the best pitcher in the game. So yep, that's just impressive to see. And, you know, Verlander has almost never had a good April, so to see him come out and just own everyone all April so far.
But he was good even in spring training, which is insane. Like, he's just been ready to go right out of the gate.
He looked exactly like he did in October all spring, just throwing 97, painting the corners.
Just on fire. I think Shohei Ohtani's trying to kill Hanley Ramirez, and it's amazing.
Is he chucking it in at him?
Well, he's been real inside all game, and these guys are just leaning right out of the box to get away from these pitches, but he just, like, Hanley Ramirez just had to take a knee and, like, take a breather. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, a little chin music there.
A little bit.
Quick heartbeat.
Tight on the inside.
So we are gonna move on and talk about a couple of larger, kind of more MLB-wide baseball topics. I don't know if we're actually going to talk that much about Ohtani or just keep watching, you know, just keep having you come in with what's going on.
Yeah, sorry, I'll just periodically give you the live updates.
Exciting. It's just crazy to see a guy doing what he's doing. It makes you start to think, like, should some of these other pitchers, you know, be playing more? Like, can they do it? Have we just kind of been babying pitchers on this front for so long that we've missed out on
the
opportunity?
Right? Like, it's hard to just say that everybody else has the capability of being a two-way player, right? Like,
oh, definitely, but yeah.
Like, not everybody can be a great pitcher and a great, like, batter. Like, I mean, the Rays have a prospect, Brendan McKay, who I think has been pretty highly touted. I think Keith Law even said that he thought he could potentially be better than Ohtani, just because of the individual strengths of his skill set. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you don't want to go shout into the rooftops that somebody's going to outdo Ohtani, but there are players out there that do have that two-way potential. And I think what's great about Ohtani is that you're going to see guys like that get developed as two-way players.
Yeah, that's so, the thing. Our team's going to, you know, kind of take that tack with some of their, you know, their prospects and, like, actually try to do this in the minor leagues or, you know,
Ghost, who could have done both, but is a little bit past his prime now.
Yeah.
And
well,
so
as a hitter, he never had a prime, so.
Well, yeah.
It was that flaw in the plan, but yeah.
I think you may end up seeing more of it. You'll see more of it with guys, because I think at, like, the really low levels, like your high school and even college levels, you see guys who do both.
Yeah.
And I think now scouts are probably going to be looking at whether or not players do have that dual school skill set and whether or not that development could go long term.
Yeah, and just kind of, you know, maybe giving it a little bit more of a chance in the minor leagues. Like, just, you know, you don't have to work it that hard and have guys, you know, playing 5 days a week, you know, with one of them being their start. But just mixing them in there where maybe they can hit and play in the field, you know, a couple times a week just to see, you know, if their skill set kind of comes along. The Tigers have Dane Meyers, who they drafted in the sixth round last year out of Rice. And I know he was a really good third baseman and a pretty good hitter in college, who's someone who wanted to be able to do this. And, the Tigers aren't having it. And he's probably not good enough where it necessarily mattered as far as, as far as his hitting goes. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of guys out there who do have at least, modest skills in the other areas. And yeah, you just wonder if there might be a little bit of a trend started if Shohei Ohtani kind of proves that it can be done. Although he is quite obviously a rare physical specimen. He is a special kid. Yeah.
Well, I was just joking before we started the podcast that he looks like he's got Captain America's upper body. I've never seen shoulders that wide in my life. They're ridiculous.
Yeah, at least without it being accompanied by like this, the whole body being.
You should have like some enormous thick neck or something, or just being all over like. Wall of man.
Yeah.
But like he just has like comically wide, large shoulders. Like I never noticed it before. Mm-hmm. Just watching this game, just like the set of his upper body is hilarious. Like, and not in a bad way. He doesn't look weird or wrong. He just has very wide shoulders.
Yeah, he's he's kind of built like a swimmer, And I always kind of thought that about like Verlander too, but yeah, Ohtani's just he's just a really, kind of slender, lean guy who just has like a huge, huge wingspan, just enormous, and long legs, So yeah, it's kind of interesting. He's generating his power both in pitching and hitting with that combination. So yeah, he does kind of stand out on the field, even if you weren't looking at his face or anything else about him. He's a big, big kid.
I gotta say, when I was watching the Royals game on the weekend, the cutest thing I discovered, and I hate to use the word cute in a baseball podcast, but it was adorable. Like, we talked a bit about his first home run, and, like, the guys snubbed him in the, like, the clubhouse, and he had to, like, pull Ian Kinsler off the wall to get his high fives and hugs. The sweetest thing about watching in Kansas City is that he did, like, a bases-clearing triple. Oh, yeah. And when he got back to the dugout, the guys were bowing to him.
Yeah.
Japanese-style bowing. And I thought that was so sweet that the team is making this, like, real effort to embrace the culture that he comes from and, like, to extend that to him. So I thought that was a really lovely kind of touch.
They're really, and they seem, you never know what guys are really thinking or whatever, but, they seem really into it. I remember, I think it was Zach Cozart who was talking with, like, it was like him and Ian Kinsler getting interviewed about Ohtani, and they were like, we saw some of the things that were written about how he'd have to go to the minor leagues. Like, dude, we saw him all spring. We knew we were going to see some wild shit.
Talking about Ohtani, I just want to bring up the article that came out this week about how the Angels are apparently asking fans to, like, be quiet for his at-bats.
Yeah.
Which I've heard conflicting things on, because apparently part of the article was that he actually appreciated it. But that somebody pointed out to me that, like, in the Japanese leagues, it's like a circus at all times.
Yeah, it's chaos there, yeah.
So, like, he is well aware of, like, loud, excited, just gonzo crowds. So I'm not sure why he would want the quieter crowd or expect something quiet, or why anyone would ask a crowd of baseball fans to be like calm, cool, and collected about one of the most exciting baseball players to come to the States ever.
Yeah, it's hard to tell because it also kind of sounded to me like there were some fans in particular who were like sitting right behind home plate and screaming at him, screaming his name, screaming all kinds of stuff. And maybe that is the problem, whereas in Japan that would just kind of blend right in. But in an American stadium, especially, an open air stadium, it's kind of like they're right on top of him, like screaming at him. So I don't know. Maybe it's just a little different as a result of that.
You know, there's always those guys that are like just super obnoxious at games.
Yeah. But it is weird. Just the very concept of telling fans to like quiet down a little bit. Like, this isn't golf. So it's just odd. But.
Right? Like, and especially a team like the Angels, who, they've had Mike Trout for a while, but this is a team that's got a reason to be very excited about what's happening right now. And to tell their fans to not be vocal about that is crazy to me.
Yep, let them go crazy.
Have a really good team right now that's doing just insanely well. And like first team to 10 wins this season and so on and so forth. So, just let them be happy about it.
Yeah. They're a couple games up on the Astros and, Yeah, you know, there was an article about this. I can't remember if it was Ken Rosenthal for The Athletic. I wish I could remember whose it was. But basically what they were saying is that a part of Ohtani's decision-making when he was trying to pick which team was that he liked the way Mike Trout doesn't really conduct himself like a star. Like, he's a star on the field and plays like a star, but outside of that, you know, is really low-key. And I guess, you know, that's kind of something Ohtani kind of wants to model himself on. So, you know, maybe that plays into it, too, that he's just, you know, he doesn't really want the individual attention. You know, he wants the team to do well. He's a team guy, so.
Oh, that makes it so tough, though, because, like, we've talked ad nauseum, and I've written articles about how big of a problem the MLB has with marketing their stars.
Yeah.
And honestly, you have a guy like Ohtani that, like, everybody is excited about. You just want to, like, seize that.
Yeah.
And make the most out of it. So it's sort of hard if he wants to kind of do the low-key approach, but you know that the baseball in general should just be milking him for all he's worth as far as, like, putting his face on posters and making shirts with his, like, you know, like, yeah. It just should be everywhere. He should be everywhere.
Yep, he should be on the Tonight Show and game shows and just, like, yeah, getting him out as often as possible on all kinds of things, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, Trout just doesn't like to do that kind of stuff, and the one who does, and who I think kind of balances it pretty well, obviously, is Bryce Harper, but he does a lot of, you know, self-promotion. It's, you know, it's his deals with, you know, various... I don't know, hair product sponsors or whatever.
Well,
whatever
the dual hair dryer commercial that came out recently, he did a special line of shoes last year for the All-Star game with Under Armour, which were unbelievable. And I'm so mad they didn't market them as runners. Sorry, runners is the Canadian phrase for sneakers. But running shoes,
or
like
tennis shoes as their bizarre.
Tennies, yeah. Which is the cutest phrase I've ever heard in my life. But they were these really incredible cleats that were like bright purple with like Miami themes on them, like pink, yellow. Like, it was just beautiful.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like Under Armour super missed the boat on not marketing those as running shoes, because I would have paid $150 for a pair of those.
Yeah, gotta hit those opportunities. But that's it. You know, it's all Bryce Harper doing that kind of himself. And then on the field, you know, he goes out there and just plays like a savage, like he always does.
Yeah.
Isn't really showing out apart from when he's angry and whatever. But
he was wearing Louis Vuitton cleats for the opening game series.
Really?
I died when I saw, like, custom Louis Vuitton cleats. He has worn at least 4 or 5 different custom pairs of cleats this season that I've seen. He had a beautiful blue Jackie Robinson pair. Just, like, all sorts of different stuff going on, but I almost peed when I saw those Louis Vuitton cleats. I'm like, how utterly ridiculous is this?
Yeah, that is something else. That is something else entirely. Yes, you know, actually, I wanted to mention this because speaking of position players pitching, the Tigers are in the process of converting Arvisin Perez, who's kind of been not really a real prospect, but like a backup catcher, you know, potentially, who's been in the farm system for a few years now. And apparently they've decided to send him to Erie to start working on being a pitcher. I don't know if there's going to be like an extended spring training stint to help him work on that, but he's always had a cannon behind the plate. And so, yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting because, you know, he was never going to hit. And it just feels like they kind of decided, like, well, maybe we should just see if, you know, if the arm can play enough to actually turn into something. So that's kind of an interesting experiment to keep an eye out for as the minor league season rolls along.
Oh, if we're going to talk minor league catchers, we should mention that the Tigers did re-sign Cade Civic. Civic?
Yep, Civic, I believe, yep.
Civic. I always want to pronounce it Ceviche. Mm. Like the fish dish.
Oh, yeah.
But that's because I look at it and I'm like, there's so many consonants and vowels in there.
Yeah.
I just don't know how to say this name. But Cade Civic, who I believe was part of the... What deal was he originally a part of?
Oh, he went over for Eric Ibar in 2016. He was part of that.
That's right.
Yep. I can't remember who else went over there with him, but...
No, it was somebody else that we got back in that.
I don't even remember, honestly.
It was somebody super underwhelming. So clearly, I mean, we ended up getting him back anyway for a song, for nothing, because he was dropped. So...
Yeah, and it's a really, it's a minor thing, because, you know, Cade Civic wasn't particularly all that good of a prospect yet either, but fairly good defensive catcher from what I recall. So, yeah, you never know. he ended up just getting released from the Braves, and so we picked him up again. So, and they've got Anibal Sanchez down there, who I believe dominated in his first start of the year, which was pretty amusing.
Also, he had like a scoreless run going against the Tigers.
Yeah.
So that was super fun to watch.
Yeah, that spring training start. So, yeah. I don't know, I was kind of laughing, though, because I could see Braves fans saying the exact same things that we've all said the past 3 years every time he put together, like, the two or three awesome outings per year in a row. Because he always seems to do that, and that I have to assume that's probably what's going on again. But it'd be interesting if Anibal could figure it out down there and keep himself afloat a little bit longer.
And yeah, it would be lovely to watch him actually, like, finish out the last part of his career on a high note. And, like, maybe extended another season beyond that, just as long as he does it on a team that's not ours.
Yep, exactly. And
you know, preferably not against ours that often.
Exactly. Although we can't really be hurt at this point. That's what I keep telling everybody. Like, there's nothing that can hurt you when you're this far down. So,
not be afraid anymore. Once you reach rock bottom, there is no further to fall.
Yep, that's just how it goes. Yeah, so let me see. Yeah, let me just talk a little bit about some of the prospects. Again, it's like super early for this. A lot of guys only have like 30, 40 ABs yet, so I'm not going to make a big fuss about Derek Hill and Daz Cameron not really getting off to much of a start at all. Isaac Paredes, who is really may turn out to be the key piece that we got back in the Justin Wilson deal from the Cubs, shortstop. He's already got 2 home runs. I believe he's batting, when is he batting? Nah, actually his batting average is still terrible, but it's early. But he does have 2 home runs and 5 extra base hits. And I know I've already been hearing reports from quite a few people that the ball is just leaping off of his bat. Everyone's really excited about him. So it looks like he's kind of picked right up where he left off last year in West Michigan, which is really good to see. That's really the only like hitter that's been doing well, but with all of our top pitching prospects basically hurt except for Bo Burrows and Kyle Funkhauser, a bunch of other guys have done really well. Someone that we kept an eye on a lot last year and had like a solid year, but not really a standout breakout type year, is Anthony Castro, who pitched for the Whitecaps last year and was really good. But so far with Lakeland, he's been outstanding. He's through 11 and two-thirds innings. He's got a .94 whip. He hasn't allowed any runs yet, and he's got 11 strikeouts. So he's been out there looking really good, throwing a nasty sinker with good life on it. He's got a really nice power curveball. And a couple people have said, you know, the changeup looks a lot better. So we may, Anthony Castro is a guy who may turn into another prospect. And he's someone that I know isn't on anyone's radar outside of people following the Tigers. So he's been doing well. Alex Fajardo has also done really well. He gave up 2 home runs in the first inning he pitched. And since then, his 2 appearances have otherwise been scoreless. And he's racked up some strikeouts as well. So things have been going pretty well down on the farm so far, apart from Manning and Perez both being hurt. So, yeah, there's some good signs, at least early on. But, yeah, it's just this part of the year is just frustrating because I just don't want to say too much. We need to see more.
Well, you don't want to jinx anything, and also it's the curse of the very small sample size.
Yep, absolutely. Dawel Lugo, who we got back for JD Martinez, he's just been hitting the cover off the ball pretty well, and for Toledo, and I think had a 9-game hitting streak coming into today. I'm not sure if he had a hit last night or not, so I didn't do the minor league recap last night, but so he's been doing pretty well. Mike Gerber's done really well so far. He's a guy you will see, I think, this year. So yeah, there's been some interesting noise down on the farm so far. Seeing if anybody else is really standing out to me, just looking through some of their numbers, see if anyone's doing anything. Nah, nothing crazy going on. The Whitecaps could use an infusion of some talent this year because they're not going to be super exciting to watch probably at first. But once the draft happens in June, we'll probably see some more players heading there. And hopefully, I haven't heard anything yet, but hopefully Matt Manning will be back there shortly and start making his first starts of the year, and I will be going to West Michigan every time that happens as often as possible because I want to see me some Matt Manning.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Yep. It was just kind of a weird start to the year. We're all excited about our pitching prospects, and then Franklin Perez is out until probably July, and Matt Manning pulled an oblique, and he's going to miss the first few weeks at least. So kind of a drag there, especially as we're pretty heavily focused on the minor leagues now. All right. I think we pretty much covered the Tigers. I got nothing else to really offer on the Tigers front. So let's talk about what the hell is going on with Major League Baseball and their vendetta, let's call it, against the pitching ninja. Because this really pissed me off today.
Oh, poor Rob.
This pissed me off.
The other
so
Rob.
Bad.
So for those who don't know, if you're not on Twitter, there's this wonderful account that's Twitter at Pitching Ninja, and he does like slow-mo or focused gifs of really sick, disgusting pitches. And it's just, it's a great account. You get to like really like hone in on the movement of pitches. You get to like see that nice slow-mo breakdown on a breaking ball or just like a slider that just sneaks away. Like, you get a really, really good view of what's happening. And I guess what's happened, there's a whole level of, pardon my French, bullshit to this. Yes. Apparently it circles back to Barstool, and I'm not gonna like rally against Barstool here, but I guess there was like a thing between Pitching Ninja and one of the Barstool guys, and as a result a ton of people reported the Pitching Ninja account. So I had erroneously said on my Twitter that it was related to the MLB directly, but I don't know if that's the case. But anyway, the bottom line is, at the end of the day, Pitching Ninja's account got suspended by Twitter. And I guess it was for non-fair use of MLB property, would be the video from the games. And to me, I think he is providing a different service. And because I've always understood the use of video for MLB play, that you could use it as long as you were discussing it or like breaking it down or creating, you know, actual discussion around parts of play.
Yep. And not monetizing it. Yeah.
Which and not monetizing it. And to me, the way that he focuses in on pitches and like really directs your attention to the way that pitchers' form works and the way that the movement of the ball goes, I think it just creates art out of it. Like, I had so much more appreciation for the movement of pitches of guys that I watch every day just looking at this account. Like, we're seeing guys, like, straight up, like, pro baseball players coming in and going, "Free Pitching Ninja" on Twitter, because we're not the only ones that get a kick out of this.
Yep. I mean, every time he posts a cool gif, yeah, you'll see all kinds of, you know, well-known pitchers who are on Twitter are all about it.
Pitchers come in and talk about their stance and how they change for balls and, like, and how they grip a ball. Like, you'll actually see real discussion of how pitching works, and it's been a fascinating account to follow. And that's what drives me nuts about this, is that I do think he's offering something legitimate there. And while I understand the reason why they say that they can pull it down for those reasons, I mean, he doesn't own it. It's not his original content. He is just slowing it down and focusing on it. I think there is an important aspect of what he's providing.
Yeah.
So that's what really pisses me off about it.
It's just, I mean, it's just the stupidity that we see far too often from Major League Baseball, where they just, I mean, you know, I don't know who makes these decisions, but whoever they are is, like, deeply out of touch with how information is transmitted by the younger generation especially, but really with anyone who's remotely computer literate at this point. You know, a lot of us were immediately like, well, yeah, well, they should have just hired him because he does, you know, he provides a service that MLB doesn't provide, that StatCast can't provide, and he just does it better than all of them. He does it with snark. He educates, as you know, with the clips, in terms of like describing what's going on. And it's not even just like the grips and the movement of pitches. It's, you know, different deliveries, like how to vary delivery times, like some of the kind of quirky stuff that like a Marcus Stroman or a Johnny Cueto will do, like how that affects, a hitter's timing. And yeah, just all delivered with a lot of intelligence and wit. I don't really know. I don't know if Rob was, you know, what level he was a pitching coach of, but he was definitely a pitching coach somewhere, maybe in college. And yeah, I mean, I just think there was so much value to that account. And you know, and it really spread, you know, for Major League Baseball, you know, which is a sport that doesn't have, you know, it has these big punctuations, but there's so much going on, you know, moment to moment in each pitch, that unless you're familiar with the game and intimately, you would miss all this stuff. And, you know, it was just a great account that, you know, did a great job teaching the game and teaching, like, the art of pitching, as Jim Price would say. And, yeah. And, you know, you just figure, like, you know, it wasn't costing MLB any. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't hurting them in any way. You know, and when people like this promote the game in, you know, like the NBA or in NHL or NFL play, you know, there's all kinds of, like, guys who break down film, especially football. Like, I mean, it just goes on and on with, like, the dudes who, you know, have these accounts where they break down, like, all these different plays throughout the game and the schemes different defensive coordinators use. And there's no one doing that for baseball, and he was doing it brilliantly. So, yeah, it was just, you know, it's just one of those moments where you just look at the sport that you love the most and just think it's run by utter morons.
Yeah, to me, like, that account was just nothing but free advertising for baseball.
Yep.
Like, it certainly made me want to watch games outside the, like, three teams that I cover. So,
And it's just so bad, you know, because, you know, obviously teams want you to go to their team page, watch, you know, the three or four video clips that they put up after each game of whatever highlight, and watch the ads, and that generates the ad revenue. But what he was doing didn't even touch on any of that, because it didn't really have anything to do with, like, you know, the strikeout that ended an inning and escaped a jam or a home run or any of that stuff. It was all about, like, this is, you know, this pitch is freaking nasty and this is why. And look at the reaction of the hitter and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it didn't even, like, tread on their toes in any way. So, yeah, it just sucks. It was just a great account. And, you know, we, you know, obviously, to take it even further, like, from the perspective of people who write about the sport, you know, it was really nice having those clips, because, like, hunting through 3-hour games for, you know, a little bit of video to cut a gif of is exhausting. And for the most part, we just can't do it. It's just time prohibitive. So I don't know how he managed to do it, but, you know, pretty much any game that was going on a given night, you would see, like, the best couple pitches that were thrown that night would all, you know, kind of pop up on his account. So I don't know. Hopefully they'll reinstate him. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know. There was a lot of outcry. There was a lot of people screaming on Twitter, and I know a lot of people were going over to Barstool Sports and screaming at those guys for being morons. But
I could have personally used the people not mentioning Barstool in my timeline, because I just need to keep those guys away from my account. Like, I don't even use the word on Twitter.
I know. I didn't even know what they were until I got on Twitter. I don't have any idea who these guys are, but whatever.
A barrage of, like, bitterness and misogyny that I just don't need anywhere near my account. I don't talk about it on Twitter, because they have, like, alerts set, and I just don't want it near my timeline.
Yep.
But yeah, no, it's so stupid.
I get arguments with Nazis and stuff all day anyway, so, like, I'm just used to it.
I don't have time to fight with people on Twitter. It's too exhausting.
Pointless, really.
But yeah, I don't know. To me, it falls within fair use. Like, and I'm not a lawyer. I have no law degree here, but I think he was discussing it and breaking it down enough. Like, I don't get how the legalities of that work. To me, I think he was offering enough of a distinctive service to make it okay. And it was free. He wasn't making any money doing it.
Yeah. And we don't know, you know, and that's the problem. Like, we don't know if MLB got wind of this, and if they did, I have no idea how they were not aware of this before. I can't. So many of their players followed the account. You know, you'd see Brandon McCarthy, Dallas Braden. I saw Kelvin Herrera complaining today.
Yeah, Kelvin Herrera was the one I saw today, where he's just like, free pitching ninja. We want pitching ninja.
Oh, yeah, so, going around, yep.
I think there's absolutely something important to that account that goes beyond just us being all like, oh, look at this filthy pitch.
Yep.
Like,
and they were getting, and like you said, they were getting all that content for free. And really, they probably, if they were smart and wanted to have some say over what he did, they should just pay him and make that
an official account. Like, make him a Cup 4 guy, or make him a guy like, you know, the Cespedes Barbecue. Like, just make him official.
Yep.
Give him access to that, and then just be like, MLB sanctioned. Look at our, like, MLB pitches at MLB pitches. Just like, I don't get it.
And
it's stupid.
And to our listeners, if you're out there and you've never, you know, you weren't following his account, you're not on Twitter, it may sound like, you know, it's a guy who posts a lot of little clips of pitches, big deal. And yeah, that's exactly why this is as big a deal as it is because it doesn't sound to you like it would be anything, and yet it is. Like, all these people are furious and all these people are mad because he did that high level of job with it, that he brought the game home in a completely different way than Major League Baseball itself is ever able to do. So
I just need to take a break here. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to transition real quick, maybe, to give them props for one thing that they have done that I'm really happy about, and it's going on tonight, which is the series between the Cleveland Indians and Minnesota Twins.
Before we do that, can I just talk about this Red Sox Angels game for one second?
Okay, go ahead.
And that Ohtani is out and Bard came in and gave up 3 home runs, 2 two-run home runs, and then Mookie Betts' second home run of the night, and this is an 8-0 game right now.
Oh, wow.
Oh, it's so bad. It's only the top of the
Daniel
third.
Bard. Daniel Bard welcoming in his own old teammates and just getting beat up.
Bard is just getting lit up.
Well, I don't care at all. I don't care at all about Daniel Bard.
Oh, now you're glad you didn't watch. I mean, Ohtani made it through 2 innings. This is rough.
Well, there you go. Yeah, it's going to be some.
So now you're glad. Now you're glad you didn't watch. This is terrible.
Yeah. Well, you know, as soon as you know, like I'm not. Yeah. You know, I'm going to watch pretty much anything Shohei Ohtani does now going forward. But yeah, in spring training, it was like, I think it was Jeff Passan from Yahoo Sports who wrote this article where he talked to all these scouts and people were like, oh, you know, he's like barely a, you know, a college level hitter at this point. He needs to stay, you know, in the minors and probably start in A-ball. All these people just ragging on him. And then, you know, within like, you know, two starts of the season beginning, you know, he's the greatest thing that's ever happened. He's Babe Ruth part 2. You know, he's the Samurai Bambino and all, you know, all this nonsense is coming out.
That,
you know,
I had never heard that nickname before, and that is just hilarious.
Yeah, and just, you know, and just taking it, you know, completely the other way, you know. And I love the hysteria over him, but yeah, you know, he's still gonna have his ups and downs like everybody else. He's not a better pitcher than Max Scherzer yet, and he's probably not a better hitter than Bryce Harper or Freddie Freeman or Votto or Trout or whoever you want to pick. So it's just gonna take him a little time, but oh boy, has it been fun so far. And man, he's just got incredible physical skills. He's incredible. So, and you know, and the thing that I didn't realize is that he's fast. Like, he doesn't look that fast, but he's one of those
dudes that's
got long legs and is just flying without really looking.
He went to third on that triple in Kansas City the other night in 11.2 seconds.
So he's, you know, there we go. Whatever else happens this year, we're going to have Shohei Ohtani to watch, which is going to be super fun. And the fact that he's on a team with Justin Upton and Ian Kinsler, both of whom are among my favorite players, and Mike Trout, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun team to watch. And when Tigers games end at 10:30, that's the team I'm going to be switching over to watch unless Verlander's pitching for the Astros. So,
I'm picking up these West Coast teams just because that's usually the only time now I have available to watch games. So I've been watching a lot of Angels and a lot of Mariners.
Yeah. I watched some Mariners last year because I thought they might do a little better finally, but I gave that up pretty early in the season. It just wasn't happening there either.
My God, there was a Mariners-A's game on this weekend that was just the most hilarious display of baseball I've ever watched in my life. There had one player hit a home run into the hit it here sign up in Safeco, like right into the restaurant that's by the hit it here sign. It was just some of the most terrible offensive play that I've, like, just... It was ridiculous. Like, I mean, the defense from the A's was just abysmal. They were dropping balls everywhere. And yet somehow there was not a 17-run lead. It was so strange.
Yeah, just one of those just weird series where you're just like, what is happening here? Actually, that series against the Pirates, like early on, the Tigers' first series was a series like that where it's like, this is even baseball. It's freezing cold. There's all kinds of weird things happening. Dixon Machado keeps coming up to plate with, you know, with runners on and the Tigers needing him to tie and lacing doubles everywhere. I was like,
there's just a Yahoo post coming up about the pitching ninja thing by Jeff Passan.
Ah, do it, Jeff.
And it was nearly every Rob Freeman treat, blah, blah. So Twitter temporarily locked his account because of multiple violations of Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Oh, Lord.
DCMA, the MCA, But he should be back soon.
Yeah, maybe they're just reestablishing the rules. Yeah, I don't know.
No, here we go. League sources told Yahoo Sports they expect a quid that would allow him to continue posting GIFs. In a letter to the league official who filed the DMCA complaint, Friedman, a lawyer by trade, oh, Rob, you are awesome, outlined his argument on how what he does benefits the league. I also understand that MLB has every right to protect its product. I'm most certainly not trying to deprive MLB of any value. Instead, I'm trying to create value by helping pitchers have a sense of community, learn, and appreciate the game. Rather than debate the legal matter, I'm more than happy to give MLB all of my gifts for free or work out some other content deal that just allows me to use MLB content, as permitted, for fair use to help pitchers, coaches, and fans understand the game. I would be happy to donate any content for free and execute a copyright license ensuring that MLB owns any GIFs I create. Attaway, Rob.
All right.
So it says MLB plans to contact Friedman in the coming days, if not sooner, at which point they are likely to agree on what constitutes fair use. The fear over the suspension of Friedman was exacerbated by fear that MLB is continuing a social media policy long seen as draconian.
Oh, we would particularly never say that.
Yeah, well, it is. It's ridiculous.
Oh, wait, I did just say. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, particularly when combined with a social media friendly NBA, which adopts the any publicity is good publicity approach to Twitter. This is awesome. Okay, so this to me suggests that we should have Pitching Ninja back as long as the MLB doesn't really like just super suck at this. But the fact that he's saying you own the GIFs, you can do this, do whatever you want with them. I mean,
yeah.
I'm glad to see that the uproar over his suspension has reached a point. It was crazy. People were going nuts.
Yep.
I'm glad to see that it has such amazing and immediate response. So that's awesome.
Yeah, and that's a little better, MLB. Like, the fact that they were actually paying attention and realized that a lot of the people super upset were their own players. So, yeah. Yep, that's good. That's good to hear. It seems like, this is going to work. Maybe they just, they have some particular guidelines they want to lay out for them, and maybe they can, all come to an agreement and make this thing happen. Well, that's good. I didn't realize
he was a lawyer, so, I mean, that's lucky for him.
Yeah, I didn't know that either, but it was good on him, so... all right. The last topic, I just, mentioned it before we went into the Ohtani stuff, but, Cleveland Indians and Minnesota Twins are playing in a series in Puerto Rico this week. And, that just seems like, just like the greatest idea. Like I've wanted teams to do this a little bit more. Like, there was the series where they went to Japan a few years ago. I think there was an Australian series.
There was an Australian series. Yeah.
Yeah. With the Dodgers. So yeah, I like that they're doing this, and I'd like to see that continue and kind of get into like the Dominican and maybe do some more of that. It just seems like, obviously, Venezuela, maybe you can't, but this just seems like such a great, kind of goodwill and outreach, thing to do, to have, and obviously there's probably some money lost in the deal, but as far as like going down there and promoting the sport in a place where so much talent is coming, it's the haven and the mecca for baseball. So they deserve to have some games played down there and kind of have that, that relationship kind of, put front and center. And of course, Francisco Lindor, who is Puerto Rican, crushed a 2-run shot tonight. And you just don't see a place go that freaking crazy, for one home run as they did for Lindor hitting that bomb. It was impressive. It was a kind of eye-opening sight for how baseball is, kind of thought about and revered down there. So that was cool.
It reminds me of an article I read on the Players Tribune a while ago from Carlos Beltran, where he was talking about being raised in that environment, because he's Puerto Rican as well. And, oh God, I hope I'm right about that. I'm sure I am.
No, he is, yeah.
Anyway, so he just talked about growing up there and how, that's just ingrained so deeply in their sense of country pride of these players who make it to the big leagues and who become stars, and they become heroes in that country.
Yeah.
And you even saw it when we were watching the World Baseball Classic, where they were selling out of bleach because the entire country wanted to dye their hair to match what the Puerto Rican team was doing. And I do think it is an incredible value and an amazing thing that they're able to go and play real, MLB baseball in that country, because I think you're going to see more than even regularly a huge generation of young fans grow up in that country wanting to do it.
Yep.
Just because they were there. They got to see on local TV or, wherever possible, that they got to see that Lindor home run and know that they could be that hero. And I think that that's just an incredible gift.
Yep. And maybe they didn't really need that because that's a place that is just obsessed with baseball already. But what I also like is for American fans to see what the sport is like in Puerto Rico or the Dominican, and just how, rabidly passionate people are about it. Because, it's just not that way here anymore. And, I think there's actually quite a bit to be learned from the experience in Puerto Rico of what baseball is like there. There's a lot for people here to take away from that. And I hope, some of that kind of translates, because, the culture of baseball in Latin America, and especially in those Caribbean islands, is just, you know, it's just like nothing else. It's incredible. And like you said, I mean, everyone there who makes it to the major leagues and is successful becomes kind of a national hero. And it's a lot the way, like, you know, hockey, you know, Olympic hockey players from Canada, or like the way Cuban boxers used to be thought of in Cuba. So yeah, it's just a super cool thing. And yeah, I'm just really pleased that they went and did it, and that they also kind of went with the intention of, you know, bringing some relief as well. You know, Puerto Rico's obviously recovered somewhat, but you know, as we've heard all winter long, like, there's still a lot of places in Puerto Rico that are still without power after Hurricane Maria. There's a lot of things that haven't been rebuilt. So yeah, you know, it was good that they brought some help there, because, you know, a lot of talent comes from Puerto Rico to America. So and obviously Puerto Rico is part of America, although
sometimes gets forgotten.
Yeah, sometimes gets forgotten. That's a good way to put it. That was more diplomatic than I want to be. So anyway.
I'm trying to be polite about it is also the country that gave us Lin-Manuel Miranda, so I feel like States could give back a little bit to it.
And I've read a couple other biographies, like I think it was Benji Molina, who his biography really kind of just set that in my memory about like what it was like for him and Jose and Yadier growing up playing baseball, and how that was everything. Like, you were either like a kid who didn't really have anything to do, and maybe, you know, there was trouble and stuff, or you played, you know, you played baseball, and you played baseball all day. So culture of it's just really cool there. And yeah, I'm glad they did that. That's pretty neat. So good on you for that one, MLB. And sounds like, you know, maybe they've taken baby steps toward joining us here in the 21st century as far as social media and, you know, allowing fans to kind of help themselves by disseminating their own content and doing a better job than a lot of times the league is able to do. So so that's about it. I don't know, you got anything else kind of you wanted to bring up for this episode, because I think we're pretty close to wrapping it.
I think we're good. Albert Pujols just hit number 2989 on his career.
Oh, that's cool.
So countdown to 3000 is inching ever closer.
That's pretty cool. And who was it? Joe Mauer hit 2000,
yeah.
Last week, so
we were having
cool.
quite the discussion about whether or not Joe Mauer has a Hall of Fame case. And I think that there is an aspect of that there for him. I know he doesn't have dazzling, like, you know, the 3,000 numbers, but I think there's something to be said for him to being on the Twins the entirety of his career, and I think he's got enough of the individual notches that there's a case to be made there. I don't know that he's a shoe-in by any stretch, but I think depending on how he winds down his career, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really see it happening, but it does kind of illustrate, like, the problem that the Hall of Fame has with catchers, because, you know, they don't accumulate value, they don't accumulate home runs, hits, the way other position players do, and it's resulted in their being, like, just woefully underrepresented in the Hall of Fame. Like, the fact that Bill Freehan isn't in the Hall of Fame is kind of bananas. And it's also
Freehan.
And if you look through those numbers, there's like 20 other catchers where it's like, well, why isn't this guy in the Hall of Fame? But, you know, Lance Parrish should probably, you know, be in some consideration for the Hall of Fame even. Joe Mauer probably as well. Like, you know, it's a different thing. You can't judge him like, you know, an outfielder or something, like the wear and tear on your legs and everything. You're not going to hit the same way, but doesn't mean you're not a Hall of Famer. Like, it's a brutal position to play and harder to evaluate. So hopefully they'll figure something out.
Let me once again reiterate, Bill Freehan, I'm going to, like, single-handedly lead a campaign for the committee to get him in there after the fact. 11-time All-Star, 5-time Gold Glove winner, World Series winner. How is this man not in the fucking Hall of Fame?
I know. I mean, he was kind of the heart and soul of that whole team in a lot of ways. So, yeah, it's baffling. It's just baffling the way catchers have kind of gotten the shaft. And, and now that we're into the war era, and everyone wants to retrofit war to guys who played in the 60s and 70s. Like, it just seems like it's going to be even more difficult. I'd like to see a committee of 50 major league, you know, former major league catchers just, you know, be told to go pick like 20 dudes and put them in the Hall of Fame. Pick your 20 best catchers you guys can come up with. And we're going to put them in because we know we've just done the catchers wrong all this time.
I just need a shirt that says catchers deserve to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Catchers deserve fame too.
Catchers deserve it.
Yeah, we'll have to figure out some kind of shirt for Breaking Tea to whip up on that one.
Yeah, just freehand for Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
my one woman campaign.
Yep. All right. Well, yeah, we've got some ideas for things coming up. I'm going to try to get. We had to cancel this last week, but we're going to try to get Dan Hasty, who's the West Michigan Whitecaps broadcaster, to come in and talk to us a little bit about what he's seen in the early going. I'm trying to find someone in either out in Erie to kind of give us a little bit of kind of firsthand update on what's going on with the Sea Wolves. We've got some other things coming. I'm gonna try
to get my new best friend Dan Dickerson to come on the show.
Yep, Dan Dickerson posting for us has just been just incredible. Like that it still just kind of gives me a little bit of a shiver, and it's like, what, how are we so fortunate to get to like kind of work with Dan Dickerson here? But that's just been awesome. And what's just funny is that he's a really good writer. There hasn't been all that much that I would have thought, like, I need to edit this or we should edit that. Like, he just kind of, like, just drops these gems on us, and we're like, awesome, thanks. So, yeah, it's been awesome. So, Dan Dickerson, thank you very much for writing for us. We really, really appreciate it. And it's awesome, you know, to hear your kind of thoughts from your vantage point on how the season progresses. That's been super cool. The other thing we can talk about is, you know, we have set up a Patreon account, and, you know, we are trying not to be, you know, too in your face about soliciting donations, but it really does help when you guys support us there. If anyone is able, please go over to patreon.com/blessyouboys, and you can become a subscriber and supporter of the podcast and the site over there, at various levels from three, I think, all the way up to,
or even a dollar. Like, I think our lowest level is like $1 a month.
Yep. Whatever you can do. It really does help us out. So
incredible if you do it. And if you can't, if it's not your budget, totally fine. We will always do this podcast for free. But we just have a little bit of extra stuff that we add in for Patreon subscribers.
Yep. There'll be some perks over there, but we won't let it suck anything really away from the main site. So we're committed not to doing that, and we won't do that. So you don't have to worry about that, but if you can help us, that would be great. And we'll be back next, this will probably be out tomorrow morning on Wednesday, so we'll be back next Wednesday for you. Ashley, anything else?
No, I think we've gone into the details of life and everything in between.
All right. Yep, and maybe when we come back next week, it will be spring. Please, God.
It is in Winnipeg.
Is it?
It is. It's beautiful. It was like, in Celsius terms, plus 15 today, which was incredible for us. There's very little snow left.
I wish I knew what that meant, but it sounds good.
I think that works out. It's like, I want to say like 50, 60.
Oh yeah. Okay. Oh, so yeah, that would be perfect. That would be just fine. And I think we are finally supposed to hit into the 50s next week. So yep, I'm going to get out, get my mountain bike ready. Go visit my great grandparents' bar where I've never been. Check that out. Keeslings. Hit that up. And yep, we'll see you guys next week. Ashley, have a great night.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.